Hi, this is Bill from Kosiaba Fitness, and today I've got a very interesting guest for you to listen to. He's been featured in the New York Times, he's been on ABC's 2020, and in my opinion, much more impressively, he is one of the most in-demand personal fitness trainers in New York City. Now, that's the hardest sell in the world. Those are the people that know the best and want the best. So if he's that hot and he's that good, he must know what he's talking about. He just came out with a brand new book, his second book called Diamond Cut Abs, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit as well as some other things. Danny, thanks for taking the time to be here. Ladies and gentlemen, Danny Cavadlo.
Hey, thanks very much, Bill. It's really good to be here. Thank you for that very nice introduction. Thank you for the kind words. And yeah, I'm really excited about the new book. I'm excited about a lot of things going on, and I can't wait to get talking with you.
Cool. Well, I just finished reading the book, read through it twice because I went, I must be missing something. And then I realized, no, I'm not missing anything. It's just all real straightforward, real practical, and real. And we'll get to the book in a few minutes, but let's talk about a little bit of your background. I'm hearing a very heavy New York accent there. You grew up in Brooklyn?
I did. I grew up in Brooklyn. I was born in Brooklyn in 1974. I've traveled many places, but I've never lived outside of New York City. You know, it was a very different time back then in terms of fitness. You know, basically, we just watched pro wrestling and did push-ups when we were little kids. And then that, in time, morphed into what became ultimately a passion, and then further down the line, a career and a livelihood, which is something I never really expected.
That's an awesome thing. If you can end up making a living off of something you love, I mean, what do they say? Do what you love and the money will take care of itself?
I've heard something like that.
Well, in your case, obviously, that's the truth.
Well, you know, I feel like I'm in a very, very fortunate position at this point to get to teach the type of training that I like to teach and get to connect with other like-minded individuals like you, who are all about keeping the fitness world clear, keeping it practical, keeping it to the point and simple instead of overcomplicating things, which I feel like so much overcomplication takes place in this business.
Well, if it's not new and revolutionary and sexy, how am I supposed to make money on it?
Right, exactly.
It's funny, I'm gonna just go off in a little tangent because I subscribe to a lot of people's little lists off of their websites to get their updates. And there's one very popular internet personality who keeps coming up with his new revolutionary techniques that I read in 1950s muscle magazines.
Mm-hmm.
But they're new and revolutionary.
You know, the incredible thing is that, you know, the human body is the human body. Unless evolution changes, and maybe our skeleton is designed different, or we're physically capable of different movements, you know, but until that happens, which is going to take millions of years, the body is going to move the way the body is going to move. You know, so everyone wants to come up with this new exercise. What are the 3 best exercises for this? What are the 10 best moves for that? And in reality, there's nothing new. You know, there's things that are tested, there's things that are experimented with, there's things that we can learn over time, broad strokes about training, but anyone who's coming out with a brand new apparatus, or a brand new diet, or a brand new exercise, you know, I'd be real leery of claims like that.
What's the old saying, everything old is new again?
Yeah, right. Every generation, you know?
Yeah, it is. You said you grew up watching wrestling. Who were the guys that, you know, got you psyched about working out? Obviously, it was some of the more muscular guys.
You know, I mean, back then, it was such a different thing. You know, there wasn't a million different channels. There wasn't a million different outlets. So, I mean, we watched the wrestling. I mean, some of the guys that I liked, I always liked the bad guys back then, you know. I liked Rick Rude more than the Ultimate Warrior. You know, I liked all the bad dudes. I also grew up watching The Incredible Hulk. Lou Ferrigno was another guy from Brooklyn. So back then, we would watch this larger-than-life image. And of course, you know, what young boy would not be like, yeah, I want to start working out when they saw imagery like that?
Absolutely.
Rocky, Mr. T in Rocky III. You know, I just remember him being so badass. That's probably why I have a mohawk today.
Okay, we'll get into your appearance later. For those of my listeners that can't see the pictures of you, we'll talk about the Cavadlo image later.
Sure.
So obviously you're watching guys like Rick Rude. You started pumping iron, you and your brothers, I assume. You by any chance, you were in Brooklyn. Did you ever go to R&J?
R&J.
Julie Levine's gym. R&J Health Club.
No, you know, the only gym back then in Brooklyn that I went to, I didn't even go to a gym until I was like 19. So I probably started working out, you know, push-up contests and stuff when I was 12 or such. But the gym I joined when I was 19 was Bally Total Fitness, Jack LaLanne on Kings Highway in Brooklyn. And it's still there. I think I might still be a member. I don't know. Talking me into some long-term deal when I signed up.
You bought one of those lifetime contracts, pay $20 a year from now on, and it's always good.
Right, basically something like that. But it's only like $20 a year, so I can't get rid of it.
No, it's foolish to. So you obviously you started, like you said, push-up contests and all of that.
Yeah, and then as a teenager, I got more into the weight training, more into the weightlifting. I got more into the strength training, the isolation, which was the style at the time. I wanted to get bigger, as most teenage guys often do, so I got more into the diet and the nutrition and the supplements, which I have since done away with. But at the time, I just really wanted to experiment with anything on a natural level that I thought would get me the results that I wanted.
Interesting that you added that on a natural level, because when you said experiment with anything, I had my next question ready to go.
You know, in terms of, you know, steroids or growth hormone, the truth is, I'm not for it. I'm not against it. I know very, very little about it. I've never really experimented with that type of stuff, to each their own. But I don't have too much to say about it. I just don't have the experience to talk about it. And I never like to be judgmental about things that I have no experience with.
Excellent. Okay, how did you get from weights to body weight? That's kind of just a strange, from being a hardcore iron head, you know, how do you get from that to body weight training?
Well, let me be clear about something. I started out with body weight training. I was doing nothing but push-ups, pull-ups, dips, and sit-ups for years before I started ever lifting any type of barbell. But my uncle gave us some old weights when I was a teenager, and my older brother and I, we started lifting them. And then in high school, I started lifting more. So I don't know if I would ever categorize myself as a hardcore iron head. But I was certainly into the weight training. But even when I was lifting weights, the body weight never left. Even when I was doing overhead barbell presses and bench presses, I was still doing overhand pull-ups, and I was still doing dips. You know, in this day and age, we often have a tendency to really separate. Oh, this guy is a body weight guy. Oh, this guy's a calisthenics guy. Oh, this guy's a CrossFit guy. This guy's an Olympic lifting guy. This guy's a powerlifting guy. This guy's a weight training guy. But in reality, you know, strength is strength, and there's a lot of overlap. Now, I fell back into body weight 100% just because it's my favorite way of training. I love there's no real specialized equipment or clothing needed for it. You can pretty much train anywhere. And it's just a lot of fun for me. That being said, weight training is great too. It's just not currently what I'm doing right now.
Okay. That makes good sense. Other than training, were you any kind of an athlete in school? Involved in any organized sports?
I was never much of an athlete in school. I think that's kind of what might have attracted me towards physical culture in the first place. Like, I never really got much encouragement to compete in sports. I had your typical elementary school psychotic gym teacher when I was a little kid. It was a big turnoff to any type of organized sports. But when I got into just, you know, push-ups and pull-ups, my only competition was myself. it was no longer a case of being the first or the last picked for a team, of which I was always the last. It was never a case of getting the highest score. It was simply a question of making self-improvement, and that's what really attracted me to it. Funny enough, now that my brother and Al and I do a progressive calisthenics certification through Dragon Door, and we travel all over the world working with bodyweight athletes and working with bodyweight enthusiasts, you know, we kind of came up with this group. We call it the Freaks and Geeks of Fitness, because a lot of the people that are attracted to this are more into the self-improvement aspect than the higher point or the higher ranking or the squatting 2 pounds heavier than their partner. It's more about the solidarity, the community, and the overall positivity and gains. So without really an athletic background, I feel like in a way it freed my mind to a more broad pursuit of this stuff.
That's interesting. One common thread that I found in a lot of people who have excelled in fitness or even in competitive bodybuilding or different aspects of it, whether it's Olympic lifting, powerlifting, whatever, is that never really was into organized sports, never was part of the team, never was part of the group, last to be picked, like you said yourself. I mean, it seems that that loner thing, and I can't imagine how you could be a loner with two brothers growing up in Brooklyn, but that loner thing seems to spawn people that excel in one aspect of fitness or another.
You know, it's hard to say for sure. It's, I mean, I wasn't 100% loner. I just sucked at sports. But, you know, I mean, there's many, many different paths, you know, since adulthood and since doing okay in the personal training industry. I've talked to people who've had similar stories, such as myself. I've talked to people that have had total opposite stories, that have had an athletic pursuit their whole life, and they knew that this destination was their journey from day one. So I think it's really all types, and that's something that's great about it, is that you can start off from sucking at every sport like me, or you can start off with an athletic background, or whatever your journey is, you can wind up in this type of place. It's kind of a cool thing.
Well, I definitely can relate to the sucking at every sport, and I can relate to having the psycho gym coach who kind of made me not want to show up for gym class just because he was such a moron. So how did you get from just enjoying training and it becoming a personal passion to it becoming your vocation, your world?
Good question. I mean, I've done a lot of things in this life. You know, I used to play music. I used to be an exterminator. I used to be a clown. I used to be a mobile marketing tour manager. And that's what I was doing most recently before becoming a personal trainer. So I was about 30 years old. I was married. I had a kid. I was certainly into my training, my fitness, my nutrition, my cooking. But my job was that I was a marketing manager for corporate events, which were sponsored by a liquor company. And it was a great job, and I loved it, and it was a lot of fun. And my brother Al, who many of you know, Al Caballo, legendary bodyweight warrior, he had been working as a training, personal trainer at the time, and had been saying to me for years, "Danny, become a trainer, just become a trainer, just become a trainer." And I just didn't think that it was something I could realistically do. I thought there was some secret, something I didn't know. And it turns out, like anything, the secret was experience. The secret was learning from others who had done it for longer than you. The secret was immerse yourself in it and do it. But I had been doing other things for a long time and wasn't ready to make that commitment, that decision, that life change. But when my son was born, that's when I decided I did want to be a trainer. You know, when my son was born, I didn't want to make a living out of doing liquor promotions anymore. Nothing wrong with that. I think there's a lot of things we can do in this life. But for me, I wanted to make my living out of doing something healthy. And that's when I quit my job. I had a great job and just began working as a trainer with no experience as a trainer, with no clients as a trainer, just with a hard, hard work ethic and with years of working out and just experience talking to people. So I would show up at the gym 5 a.m. in the morning and start hustling to get my business going. After a few years of that, I was promoted to the fitness manager of the largest gym in that company. I was hiring and firing the trainers. I was training the trainers. I was selling the personal training. But my life kind of became distanced from the training itself. Here I was, a manager with a $2.4 million budget at one of the hottest gyms in New York City, but I wasn't doing any one-on-one training anymore. So at that point, I left and started working independently. Around that time, Al and myself were contacted by Paul Wade, who wrote Convict Conditioning, about doing a little bit of modeling in his sequel to Convict Conditioning, Convict Conditioning 2, and that's how we became involved with Dragon Door. So yeah, a lot of stuff went down over the last 10 years or so.
Wow, you did something that I don't think most people would have the guts to do. After having this new responsibility of the baby being born, you walked away from a good paying job. You'd think most people would go, okay, well, maybe I'll try that on the side, but I'm not going to give up my solid, safe career. You just walked away from it and went, I know I can do this. I know I can make it happen.
Well, I don't believe that personal training can be done on the side, you know, unless you've been doing it for 10 years and then you scale it back. But I don't think anyone can build a personal training business or any business on the side. You know, a lot of the time when people get into personal training, they think, oh, personal training, I'll do it part-time. Great, I'll do it from 8 in the morning until noon. But the truth is, when you work as a personal trainer, when that's how you pay your bills, when that's how you buy shoes and how you feed your family, when you work as a personal trainer, your schedule is not dictated by you. It's dictated by 25 practically strangers, and those are the people you train. Those are your clients. So if you have somebody who wants a trainer at 6 in the morning and you can't do it, they'll find someone who can. By the same token, if you have somebody who wants a trainer the night before at 9:30 p.m. and you say no, they'll find someone else who can. So I at least understood enough about getting started in any industry that if you really want to make money or you want to be successful or you want to have clients, you have to immerse yourself in it. It's also worth noting that my wife is super cool and very understanding and herself is a free thinker. She switched careers too at around the same time. We're both just like, screw it, man. We're going to do this. We're going to both change what we're doing. We're going to do this the way we want to do it. And, you know, that's part of what we love about each other. And that's part of how we can survive the type of person that each other is. Because we're both just like, yeah, what the hell? Let's give this a shot.
That's awesome. Because making a change like you made could be grounds for divorce with a lot of people.
Well, I knew I could fall back. You got to look at these things like, what's the worst that could happen? So you look at it, you say, what's the worst that can happen? 3 months from now, I'm broke. 3 months from now, I'm in debt. 3 months from now, I go back and I say, okay, I'm going to get back into event marketing. You know, I didn't burn any bridges when I left that industry. I gave people months' notice. I finished every job that I was working on. I completed every project, went above and beyond, and left things on great terms. I could walk back to that business tomorrow if I wanted to, because I left things on good terms. That's another thing people don't really do. You know, a lot of being successful in personal training, or event marketing, or with your workouts, or successful nutrition, is just paying attention to details and seeing things through. You know, it's like we were talking about earlier, you know, the quick fix culture and the instant gratification culture. It's like, nah, whether it's a job or a workout, see it through, pay attention to detail, don't half step it. So I left things on good terms. I said, what's the worst that can happen is I have to go back. And thankfully, I haven't had to go back yet.
You're a very smart man. A lot of people don't recognize that you got to keep those doors open because, well, I'm going to just go off into one of the things I'm most proud of in my life is when I left the gym industry, I let everybody know a month in advance that I was closing the doors. I made sure the contracts were absorbed someplace else. And I let everybody know exactly what was happening. Because I've seen so many gyms. I don't know if this happens everywhere, but in South Florida, it's not uncommon to show up at 8 o'clock in the morning for your workout and find the door locked and the building empty.
Right.
So that was something that I've always been very proud of. I can still walk around in Hollywood and feel safe. And I still run into people 20 years later, he'll go, man, I really miss your gym. So I can definitely appreciate what you did and how you did it, and it's something that most people don't really have the sense to recognize. You can't burn bridges because you never know when you're going to need those people or that door to be open to you again.
100%. And you know, you sell yourself short in life when you leave things nasty with people. You know, you carry around that negativity, that nastiness. It doesn't go away. It harbors deep inside you. You know, you feel it every day. Like, you're always better off leaving things positive. You know, even when I left the gym, you know, fast forward after leaving event marketing, now I'm working for a really great gym in New York. And I did that for a few years. I trained, I managed there. Even when I left that gym, I did something no manager ever does. It's such a cutthroat industry. When I left, I think I left on the last day of March, and the first day of April was gonna be the next manager's first day. I left about $30,000 in business for him to put on the next day. I could have ran everybody's credit card and made a commission on that money. But I said, you know what? I'm going to leave this gym in good hands. I'm going to leave them with a monetary surplus in my absence. And I didn't even make that commission. I saved it for the team for the next month. Why? Because you don't fuck anybody on the way up, because you may see him again on the way down. And it feels good to do nice things.
It does. You know, that's something that people forget sometimes because they're always in such a hurry. Sometimes the big payoff is just doing something nice for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be a monetary payoff. It doesn't have to be anything more than it just feels good to be a good person.
Mm-hmm. I think Zig Ziglar said something like, and I'll paraphrase, the greatest joy you can get out of life is helping other people. You know, and it's true. It really is.
I'm going to just go in one little direction since you mentioned Paul Wade and convict conditioning. Does Paul Wade exist? There's so much commentary around that Paul Wade is a nom de plume for John Duquesne.
Well, let me give your listeners a little background about Paul, Coach Wade. You know, he, according to story, has done an extended amount of years of his life incarcerated in various institutions. In that time, he has trained with many great prison athletes and made a system, the convict conditioning system, based on 6 major body weight equipment-free movement patterns for total body strength and conditioning. He shopped this manuscript around and heard no, 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 no from everybody. And then a few years ago, he shopped this manual to John Duquesne, who opened up the book and was like, convict conditioning, what the hell is this? But he looked inside and was blown away by the material and decided to put out this book, Sight Unseen, with this author. He'd never met him, he never heard him, nothing like that ever happened, but he took a leap of faith and published this book. Fast forward a few years later, convict conditioning has been translated into dozens of languages. It's still a top 20 seller on Amazon right now, years later. Paul Wade has put out a sequel, Convict 2. He's put out a sequel called CMAS. He has another book, which is going to come out soon, called Explosive Calisthenics. So this book has really become a phenomenon. Now, onto the controversy. No one has ever met Paul Wade that I know of. No one has a conversation with him. No one ever shook his hand. So there are conspiracy theorists out there who say, hey, this guy Paul Wade, who is he? He's got this amazing story. He's got this amazing information. He's got this amazing personality. But who the hell is he? Is he somebody he claims he's not? Is he this person? Is he that person? So having never met Coach Wade myself, all I can say is this. I have corresponded with him via email hundreds of times for years now, and whoever he is the person he says he is. His emails are written in the same voice as his books. His attention to detail is written in the same tone as his manuals, as his articles, and as his workouts. He's the real deal. Whatever reason he chooses for anonymity, I couldn't say. There's enough people out there speculating on the internet that I don't even have to speculate. He does not want his identity known. But I'll say this. It's definitely not John Duquesne. John Duquesne is a CEO of the highest order. He is constantly seeking out new material. He revolutionized the fitness industry with kettlebells. He revolutionized the fitness industry with progressive calisthenics. He is constantly putting on RKC, PCC, HKC certs. He's constantly looking for new talent. He is a constant facilitator of greatness. He's a busy dude. He's traveling the world in constant pursuit of excellence in physical culture. John Duquesne just doesn't have time to be Paul Wade. So whatever Paul Wade is, being Paul Wade is definitely a full-time job within itself.
That's a great answer and a great story.
And thanks. I've said it a few times.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you just hit the play button and... All right, let's get back to you. Let's get back to you. So basically, your start with Dragon Door and the PCC was as a model for the original Convict Conditioning book. And that was the exposure to Duquesne and so forth.
It was the second Convict Conditioning. It was Convict Conditioning 2. And my brother Al did most of the shooting for it. I was actually out of town when we were contacted about it. So Al did the shots for the book. For some of the chains like the Human Flag and the Trifecta. And then I also submitted some random images, all of which wound up being used in the book. But the real interesting thing about it is that we sent one extra image, which was what's now a legendary move, which was Al doing a human flag off of me. So essentially he's the flag and I'm the flag pole. And that image, we just sent it to them randomly. That image wound up being the cover of Convict Conditioning 2. So that was essentially our introduction to working with Dragon Door. After that, Al put out a book called Raising the Bar and a DVD, which we were both in. And then he did a book called Pushing the Limits. After that, I wrote a book called Everybody Needs Training, which is very different for Dragon Door because it's not about working out. It's more about getting started in the personal training industry. After that, Al put out a book called Stretching and Mobility, called Stretching Your Boundaries. And I most recently dropped Diamond Cut Abs, which phenomenally has been number one on Amazon in ab workouts since it came out 3 weeks ago. So I'm just totally blown away with how it's going right now.
Well, that's awesome. See, this is another point to why you're successful. You're not afraid to talk about Coach Wade. You're not afraid to promote your brother. You're not afraid to promote all these other people.
These guys, Coach Wade and Al, have done so much for me. I am happy to promote anybody and everybody who I think is doing good stuff. You know, I have these books. You know, the people who appear in these books, they're not models. There are other people I know who are trainers. There are people who I believe who are fighting the good fight, who are helping people out, who are keeping the world fit, who are making the world a better place. You know, I asked my buddy Eric McAdams to be in every single book I do because, number one, he's got a great look, but number two, I'll do everything to promote him because he does so much to make the world a better place every day.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Have you ever done any motivational speaking?
I do a seminar at the PCC, but we'll see what the future holds in terms of motivational speaking. You know, and when I did, when I worked for the gym, I had to do sales meetings for, you know, my trainers and for other gyms. And I used to do, you know, some of their corporate event type of stuff. So I've addressed a lot of people at a time. But the future of Danny the motivational speaker remains to be seen. We'll see. It's a long life. We'll see what's ahead.
Well, it just seems like it would be a natural carryover.
Well, thank you.
Let's talk about the book. Let's talk about the book. I read through the book. It's an easy read. It's a quick read. And I loved, you know, what made me buy the book, honestly, was the reviews on Dragon Door, primarily Marty Gallagher's review. A book that says I can drink whiskey and still get abs. I'm buying it.
Yeah, Marty Gallagher is quite a character. You know, it means a lot to me to have his endorsement. Again, for those of you not familiar, Marty is not only a three-time powerlifting champion, Marty is also an acclaimed journalist for decades, you know, way before there was an internet where everyone was published. This guy was writing for magazines, writing for fitness magazines, putting out books, you know, for I think at least 20 years. He's trained some of the greatest champions in powerlifting, so he's the real deal. So it means a lot to me to have Marty on board with his endorsement. But yeah, you know, people are digging this book, you know, they're resonating with it. The thing is, you know, when I started getting into abdominal training, there was a lot of focus on measuring and counting calories and measuring fat grams and this calorie from here and that calorie from that and weighing your food and measuring this and counting that. And it got to a point where I felt like a lot of people in my generation were getting a very unhealthy relationship with food. And, you know, years later, when I started trying other things, like just keeping things more clean, more pure, more free of supplements, and just keeping things closer to their source, their natural source, rather, that my body started really changing in more favorable ways. You know, a lot of these absolute dogmatic rules that I was trying to do when I was 20 years old, like, never eat cheese or never have a drink or like all these things that I believed, you know. Now, when I started writing the book, I was in my late 30s and, you know, I was able to eat cheese. I was able to eat meat. I was able to, like Marty pointed out, drink whiskey. And I really wanted to talk about that. You know, a lot of fitness people, they don't really talk about what they actually do in terms of practice day-to-day life. They'll talk about what they do when they're 100% on in terms of training, but I'm not 100% on in terms of training 365 days a year. No professional athlete is 100% on in terms of training and diet 365 days a year. You know, any actor who you see, like I've had clients say to me, I want to look like Brad Pitt in Fight Club, or I want to look like Tobey Maguire in Spider-Man. And I often have to tell them that Brad Pitt doesn't look like he does in Fight Club 365 days a year, and The Rock doesn't look like The Rock 365 days a year. Yes, when you see them photographed, that's what they look like, but you have to allow that you are going to have a glass of whiskey or a meal that deviates from the ideal plan. And I just wanted to talk about this stuff as honestly and candidly as possible. There's nothing that I think I abstain from 100% of the time that I really want. I think deprivation is a very, very unhealthy thing. And I feel like sometimes, you know, when we get focused on a muscle or a muscle group like the abs, something that people associate so much with physical beauty, something that people obsess about so much, I feel that if we get too obsessed with that, we lose sight of overall health. And you always got to keep this stuff in the context of the big picture. You know, if you're missing out on loving life because you're obsessed about the bottom two cubes of a six-pack, then you're selling yourself short, Jack. You know, abs are great, but they got to be enjoyed in the context of the big picture, as everything really should.
Okay, you just answered, like, my next five questions all in one shot.
Right on. Let's try to be thorough.
You're good. No, you're good. The nutrition section, I don't want to call it a diet section because the word diet has a lot of negative connotations with a lot of people. The nutrition section, you know, when you said, I ate a bacon cheeseburger. I went, cool. All right. This guy is honest. The biggest lie, like you said, these people are not that way all the time. I attended a seminar when I was a kid. The gym I was going to brought in a Mr. Universe winner. Uh-huh. Who swore he had not consumed a carb for the last year. And the owners of the gym the next day were talking, and I said, what'd you guys do after the seminar? I said, oh, we went out for pizza.
Yeah, right.
They took this guy who told these people, you know, a whole bunch of us that spent, well, I don't know, $25 a head, whatever it was, back in 1975, which was, hey, I was
not
an 18...
Funny, man.
Yeah, for me, I was an 18-year-old kid. That was a big deal. I had to beg my parents for that $25.
Uh-huh.
You know, I haven't eaten a carb in a year, and the guys next day tell, oh yeah, we went out for pizza and beer.
And that's something that fosters an unhealthy relationship with food. Now you got some 18-year-old kid out there saying, oh, Mr. Universe doesn't eat carbs, I'm not going to eat carbs. And, you know, they believe it because they're told to believe it. It's bullshit, you know?
Yeah, well, the whole supplement industry is based on that.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I talk about in the book is that food is associated with life. I mean, it's something we enjoy. You know, when we taught the progressive calisthenics certification in Ireland, I will not be shy about saying this. The very last night, the third day after the century testing, I was invited out by some of the guys there for an authentic Irish Guinness. And I really don't drink beer very often at all. That's the God's honest truth. But do you think for a minute I'm going to turn down an authentic Guinness in Ireland with people I just spent a weekend working on advanced calisthenics moves with? It was a great life experience, and I think I probably drank three or four of them that night. Does that mean it's a part of my day-to-day eating style? Absolutely not. But does it mean that I'm going to live in a sense of deprivation if I get the chance to have a life experience like that? I'm grateful I drank those beers, and I'm grateful for the company that I shared when I drank them, you know?
Well, that kind of is like a... I guess that makes up for the story about the fondue in France in the book.
That's right. That thing killed me. That thing killed me. For those of you who don't know, when I was 19, I had this extraordinary experience to travel France in a rock and roll band. And we were hosted by some people one night, and I was really obsessed with abs. Like, I was doing 300 crunches in, like, a pile of hay or bird shit if I had to on the side of the road. And I was really into counting calories. I was really into counting fat. And they were making this fondue, and I could hear it bubbling softly, gurgling in the background. I could smell it. But I think I read something like that weekend that said, never eat cheese if you want six-pack abs. So for that whole time in France, my first time in Europe, I did not have any of that fondue and none of the cheese, nothing. I just sat there listening to it and smelling it. Thank goodness I at least had enough sense to drink a little wine back then.
Something like that, when I read that, I went, oh man, that almost brought tears to my eyes. That's one of those, like you said, a life experience that you know, you may never relive, a wonderful experience, and he chose to sit there and make himself miserable and not do it.
But I feel like that's the type of stuff I really wanted to include. It was really important for me to be personal, because I feel like so many of us can relate to that type of thing in our journey with fitness, or obsessing about reps, or obsessing about one food or the other. I mean, I think anybody, whether they want to admit it now or not, but I think anybody who's ever trained hard in some capacity has obsessed about at least five different things, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, whether it's a body part, or a food group, or a training regimen, or an exercise, or a supplement, or something. I mean, we've all been obsessed with these things. It's a fact. People deny it now. They're like, nah, man, I'm just in it for the function. But look, we've all done it because we want to take our shirts off. We've all done it because we want to have some type of strength goal. We've all done it for reasons besides just function. It's true.
Yeah, the function thing is a brand new thing.
Mm-hmm. Sure, we want to be functionally strong. Who doesn't? You know, who wants to get knocked down? Who doesn't want to be able to pull their own body weight? Who, you know, of course we all want to be functionally strong. But there is something more with those of us who really get involved with it. And there's nothing wrong with that. I embrace it. I celebrate it.
Well, you should. You should. It's saved a lot of our self-esteems. I mean, I was... Yeah. You were the guy that never got picked. And I was the little fat kid who got made fun of. So, you know, to me it wasn't about functional. I didn't care if I could function. I just wanted to look good so nobody would pick on me anymore.
Right.
And, you know, that's
100%.
That's the reason, realistically, why most people get into exercise. Because what's the slogan? It's not feel better, look better. It's look good and feel good.
Mm-hmm.
It's always that look good always comes first in any bit of advertising you ever see.
Well, that's marketing, right, of course. You know, you got David Barton Gym, look better naked, you know, you have all that stuff. Because it's true, I mean, we respond to it. We're a physical culture, you know, it just is what it is.
Yep, that is true. Everything is a visual. You want to look good, you want to be attractive. But, you know, you have perceptions of what's good and what's attractive. Now, going back to the book, the nutrition section is awesome. It's the fact that you don't have detailed diet plans in there, I thought was a great thing, because there's nothing for people to obsess about following exactly. It's this is how I eat, and this is the guidelines. You put guidelines in there to make people think and make them make choices for themselves.
Yeah, I'm really glad you said that, because that was something I weighed in heavily about. I had actually written another section with specific recipes and this and that and blah, 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 and then decided to omit that because I was like, well, what the hell am I doing here? I'm talking about this stuff in terms of concept. I just want to leave it alone with that. And, you know, I had obsessed over specific recipes at a younger age, and I just decided, I mean, even my specific recipes weren't going to be too exact. It wasn't going to be like 2 cloves of garlic. It was going to be like olive oil, garlic, da-da-da-da-da. But still, I just wanted to put it out there and let people experiment with food, because ultimately that's what everybody's going to do on their own anyway. You know, there's an old saying, or maybe it's a new saying, but you can't tell anybody anything. And it's the truth. People just need to experiment and explore and see what happens with their own common sense. And that was a really big, important thing to me in the book, too, was to talk about in terms of not just nutrition, but in terms of training. Hey, man, this is what worked for me. I'm not saying this is the only game plan in town, but I'm telling you, this stuff works because it's worked with everyone I've known who actually embraced it. Sure, there are other methods, but I'm not going to talk about it because I don't know about it.
See, that's what I enjoyed. I've read the book, and I'm like, damn, it's done already?
Thank you. That's a huge compliment.
Honestly, when it's like at the end, and it's, I don't remember the stuff at the end, it's all the Dragon Door promotional stuff that's always at the end of every book. I went, damn, that's it? There's a lot of good stuff there, but I wanted to hear more.
There will be more in time.
Yeah,
that's great. I really appreciate that. Thanks. That's a huge compliment.
Well, it's an easy read. It's a fast read. And, you know, there's a few places where you say back in chapter 2 when we talked about it. And I went, that was back in chapter 2? I just read that 5 minutes ago, I thought. So it just, and I like the way you broke down to the simplest and most basic ab exercises to stuff that I looked at and went, he's got to be on drugs if he thinks I'm ever going to do this.
Well, here's the thing with that is, you know, a lot of the time, you know, like Al and I are known for these advanced calisthenics moves, for front levers, for human flag, for all these crazy things, which are killer ab workouts, yes. But that stuff is not necessary to get ripped, toned up, six-pack abs. And most of the people who reach out to me are not coming at me like, hey, how do I do a human flag? Most of the people that are coming at me are like, hey, what can I do to get in shape? How can I approach what I'm eating differently? What are some basic exercises I can get started with? So it was really, really important to me to spend a lot of time on the basic exercises, planks, full body tension, just lying down, single leg raises, double leg raises, knee tucks. Like, there's as much beginner abs content in this book as there is advanced abs content.
See, that's one of the things that's great, because I think some people might look at your picture, and if they flip to, I don't know if you've got a picture of you doing a flag in this book somewhere or not, they're going to go, I can't do this, it's going to intimidate. But if they go to one-legged leg raises, a 90-year-old man in a hospital bed can do a one-legged leg raise.
And that's why it's there, because these are exercises that I've done with clients of all different fitness levels that I've seen get results. So it was really important to me that a very, very beginner, someone brand new to fitness, someone with no idea where to turn, could pick up this book and gain something out of it. And about the flag, you know, there's a couple human flag photos in the book, but it's not even one of the exercises in the books.
No, it's not. I noticed that.
The photo was there just for the visual, but it's not one of the exercises. It's not, I mean, it's an amazing feat of strength for sure, but it's certainly not an exercise that someone needs to get six-pack abs, you know?
So no.
It'll be in a future book, that's no doubt. But in terms of ab exercises, while they're all full body to some degree, I wanted to focus on the ones with the abs as the primary movers.
Okay, actually, I'm going to ask you a question about one particular exercise in the book that I was surprised to see, is your approach to a side plank. I've always seen other people do a side plank off an elbow like they do a regular plank. So why the arm extended plank as opposed to the off the elbow plank?
Well, you know, there's different ways of doing any of these things. So, you know, doing it with the straight arm as opposed to on the forearm is going to have some advantages, and it's going to have some disadvantages as well. You know, so when you're doing it on the forearm, you definitely have a more solid base. At the same time, you're closer to the ground, so it's gonna put your leverage a little bit less in your favor. But I also like doing the side plank from the extended arm because I like going into it from a push-up position. But that being said, yeah, I mean, it could certainly be done from both. There's no right or wrong, and I definitely encourage doing it from either way. But yeah, like I said, you do it on the hand, you're going to have a little more tension on the arm, on the hand, and a little less of a footprint and be a little higher off the ground. But they're both great.
Well,
I second thought I should have probably put them both in there.
Okay. Well, I got to tell you, the people that are in my online exercise class don't like you right now, because after I read the book, I went the next morning, we're going to try something new, guys. I've never seen this exercise before, and I don't know why I didn't think of it myself, so we're going to do our side planks a little differently. They weren't happy.
Well, you know, it's one of those things. It's harder in some ways, and it's less difficult in other ways, but it's definitely a lot more tension on that wrist.
Yeah, there's a lot of tension on the wrist, the shoulder, the elbow, but it's a good thing, considering, like you said, we're shooting for full body strength anyway.
Yeah, right?
Okay, all right. We've said enough good stuff about the book already here. It's a great book. Buy it. It's available in paperback. It's available in ebook. For those of you that can't see the photographs, the descriptions on all the movements are clear and simple. And if for some reason something doesn't make sense to you, email me.
Email me.
Okay, email Danny. That's even better. But the descriptions, so that's another thing I like about the book. A lot of people don't take the concept that somebody might not be able to see the photograph into their mind when they do a description. A lot of times they don't even have a description, and I don't know if you gave this thought or not, but your descriptions are clear and simple enough that you don't need to see the photographs.
That really means a lot to me. I definitely gave a lot of thought into trying to be as detailed as possible, but still as simple as possible. You know what I mean? I try to give as much direction with as few words as I could. Like, a lot of the time, I find it's one of two ways. Either there's no detail, or things are overly detailed. Sit in this way with your scapula retracted and your pelvis tilted at 35 degrees with a prone supinated position here, and it just, okay. Whereas I wanted to kind of find a balance with being descriptive but not overly wordy. So the fact that you're saying you found the descriptions helpful really, really is great. I appreciate you saying so.
Well, everything I look at from not just the standpoint of, okay, I've been doing this for 40 years. Even if the description's halfway there, I should be able to get it. I'm looking at it from the standpoint of somebody that might look at my website or might take my online class who is visually impaired, who can't see the picture, and has never done anything before. And I want it to be clear to them so they have half an idea of what they're doing at least.
What's nice about writing about this stuff, you know, and this goes true for my brother Al as well, is we've taught this stuff a lot on very large scales. Like, we've taught this type of calisthenics, you know, to groups all over the world as large as 70 people. So the cues that we choose to use are the ones that are not superfluous. They're not those extra things. They're the real bones of it. And we've kind of zoned in on what the main things are that people tend to respond to more.
The ones they get.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Let's talk about you as a trainer. You're writing books, you're publishing stuff on bodybuilding.com all the time. You're traveling around doing the PCC seminars. You're still training clients on a regular basis?
I am. I'm training fewer clients than I used to. It's just a matter of hours, but I still have clients that I work with 100%.
Since your whole thing is body weight. I'm assuming all of your clients are body weight clients. Where do you generally train them?
Well, I train my clients in different places. You know, some of them I train outdoors at Tompkins Square Park. There's a space I use, an indoor space on 19th Street in Chelsea in New York. Sometimes I go to people's homes, but I don't train all my clients 100% body weight. I train my clients with whatever is the most appropriate means. So I have people that I work with who are not necessarily into advanced calisthenics. I have people I work with that just want to lose weight or get some basic strength. And for those people that might not be able to do a handstand push-up for shoulders, I'll have them do some presses for shoulders. I got no problem with that. So all of my clients do body weight, but there's some that also do some external resistance as well.
Okay. I'm going to throw a question at you here, and this is just like some free advice for the people listening. Since you've dealt with people of all different physical levels, which you've said, a very common issue amongst blind people is really lousy balance. I've got a friend that's a world champion powerlifter. This guy has squatted 550, deadlifted 600. He can't stand on one foot if you held a gun to his head. How would you take a client who has just got major balance issues, forget about learning to do a pistol, how do you get them to stand on, how do you get them to improve their balance enough to just stand on one foot? How would you regress it?
I mean, to begin with, I don't have experience working one-on-one with anyone blind. So in that particular example, I'm definitely not the best authority. But generally speaking, if someone's having a hard time balancing on one foot, I would just take a real, real basic assist. You know, stand next to a bar or a pole or a bench or a wall and just put your hand on that wall and pick up a foot. Once that starts becoming more comfortable, maybe you could just touch the wall with four fingers or three fingers, maybe just two fingers or one finger. So you're standing on one foot with just one finger touching the wall. Maybe try to move the finger away and put it back. But, you know, these things with balance, that's just one of those things that's difficult for some people. Plus also, anybody in any group is going to have balance on one leg come easier than the other leg. So yeah, that stand on one foot, alternating foot is a good drill too. That's pretty much what I got on the spot as an overall thing. Other than that, I'd have to see any individual case specifically.
Okay. I know because we talked before we started recording that you hadn't dealt with anybody who had a visual impairment before, but knowing you're as good as you are and been doing this as long as you have, I figured I'd put you on the spot and say, all right, how would you approach it?
Oh, yeah, no, I like being put on the spot. That's my answer in a hypothetical scenario. If I was actually in the scenario, I'm sure I'd observe other things that would make me kind of move that answer in a different direction. But that's what I got for... Okay. Sitting in my office talking to the computer.
Okay, now that's awesome because the balance thing is so much of an issue. I've been teaching clients to do lunges for years and I can't do them myself.
Like something with a lunge, you know, in terms of balance, bringing the feet into a wider stance can be very helpful. You know, the narrowest expression of a lunge would be if you were kind of doing it like on a straight line, like a tightrope style thing, not necessarily on a tightrope, but that straight line. But the further distance you have in between your feet as you separate them wider would give you a larger base for it.
Sure. That makes perfect sense. Okay, you haven't dealt with anybody with a visual issue, but you were telling me about a client that you had that did have a disability.
Yes, I worked with a gentleman for several years who was 100% hearing impaired. He had never been able to hear in his life. So he originally contacted me via email and reached out to me, and I made a plan to meet up with him. Very cool dude, very highly functioning dude. I'll tell you, he made some tremendous gains, and he still trains. He's still a pretty active runner, and it was a definitely a different perspective for me as a trainer. But I'll tell you what, he spoiled me because he was really extremely highly functioning. Like he read my lips, He laid down the rules with me the first workout. He said, I need you to talk at this tempo. I need you to, I don't know. He had a couple other rules about just communicating with him and about expressing myself and as ways to facilitate the best type of communication. And he made it really easy for me, I gotta say.
That's great. That's excellent. A lot of trainers would have gone, I don't know if I want to do this. When I first...
Well, you know, I'm not going to tell anybody no, having never met them. You know, if I met him and I thought it was impossible, or if I thought I wasn't capable of training him in the capacity that he needed, I would have said to him, hey man, it was great to meet you, but I don't want you to waste your money on me if I can't give you what you need. But I felt 100% in my ability to give him the type of training he needed, and a large part of that was due to him being adapted to this world so well.
And I would say the fact that he gave you the guidelines and showed you, this is how you can best help me.
Oh man, this was a dude who was so confident in everything he did, you know? He was a single guy, he lived alone. So I imagine that in life, it was very helpful for him to just lay down the ground rules pretty much any time he let someone into his world and be like, listen, buddy, talk to me like this, don't talk to me like that. Talk to me like this, don't talk to me like that. And just, that's how it's going to be easiest for both of us. And I'm sure it had taken him years for him to learn that this was the best way for him to go about getting things done. But that's what we all do, really, is we figure out the best way to navigate through getting things done efficiently and effectively.
Sadly, some people never figure that out.
Yeah, right.
Okay. So you're still training clients. Somebody in the New York area that might have an interest in meeting you and trying to work with you, how would they find you?
Hit me up on my website, DannyTheTrainer.com, or give me a phone call or a text, 917-414-9013. That's my real phone number. That's my cell phone. Reach out to me. We'll see if we can make it happen. Like I said, I'm always accepting new clients, but with the understanding that my schedule is kind of limited availability. So whereas I used to work with people, if they needed a trainer, someone to work out with 2 or 3 days a week, I was the right guy for them. Now it's turning into the people I work with are going to have to be the type of people that are working out on their own without me, and maybe we could just get together once a week or twice a week or once every couple weeks, depending on the time of year, and just tweak it a little bit, do some type of lessons, do some type of training. But it's hard for me because of the travel schedule to be available, but shit, I'll make it work for anyone who can make it work with me.
Well, you know, I've been to New York twice in the last year, and I wish I had bought this book and talked to you 6 months ago, because I would have gotten in touch with you and said, Danny, give me an hour, show me some stuff.
Well, hit me up next time you're in the NYC. Definitely hit me up.
My wife would have killed me, but it would have been a simple matter of, I'll take you out for an awesome dinner. Let me play with this guy for an hour.
Definitely.
It's all trade-offs. All right. Well, I know you got a lot going on. So is there anything you would like to say to wrap this up?
I would just like to thank you for having me on as a guest. I'd like to thank anybody who's listening. If anyone wants to check out Progressive Calisthenics or Diamond Cut Abs, just go to DragonDoor.com and check it out. Again, thanks for spreading positivity and for keeping things practical and simple. You know, you said you like my approach. I got to say, I checked out your website. I love your approach too. So it's always a pleasure for me to connect with others in this capacity.
Well, I really appreciate you saying that. And no, I did not pay him to say that, guys. And this is Bill from Kosiaba Fitness, and we've been talking with Danny Cavadlo, the ab man, the body weight trainer man, the calisthenics expert, the hottest trainer in New York City, and thanks for listening, everybody.